Good morning, everybody. Today is Monday, October 5th, 2015. And this is Before the First Cup of Jewels here on UCY.TV. Happy Monday, everybody. We made it back to the beginning of the board to start all over again, see if we can make it to go by Friday. It is 50 degrees and very sunny here in upstate New York. So even though it's chilly, it looks nice outside through the window. But once you go out there, a little bit of nip in the air. The leaves are already starting to change here. We are seeing fall coming at full speed. It won't be too long before we see some of that white stuff, which I'm not looking forward to. Well, I have a big surprise for everyone today. Hurricane Joaquin blew up the East Coast and flooded everybody out down in the Carolinas. And what came floating in, blowing in? Mr. Brandon Turville got a day off today, and he is joining us as guest. Hey, Brandon, good morning.
Hey, Jules, how's it going?
Good. How's it going down there?
Well, it's pretty wet. You know, this isn't actually the hurricane that did this. This was another storm system. It had nothing to do with the hurricane. So, thankfully, we missed the Joaquin. But, you know, it's pretty rough here in South Carolina today. We've had a lot of major infrastructure crumbles, which should show everyone the state of our infrastructure. You know, several days of raining has washed out roads all over the state. We actually had a dam burst near Columbia, and the water washed away a number of bridges on the I-20 corridor, and I-95 is being shut down for the same reason. It's been shut down for a while. So all across the state, I think we've had five or six people killed as a result of this. Charleston is underwater. You know, people are kayaking in the streets, or were before the authorities came out and asserted themselves. So, you know, Columbia is also in a bad situation. Spartanburg was in a really bad situation as well. So it's still raining, too. It hasn't stopped.
Wow. Yeah, I saw some news that you posted last night about them declaring states of emergency and curfews.
Oh, yes. I really would like to comment on that because, first of all, the declaration of the state of emergency, you know, that's fine. It really was an emergency. The states tend to do this quickly because it opens the way for federal funding. If they don't declare a state of emergency, they don't get emergency funding. So our governor actually declared the state of emergency before the rain started falling, and this was when we were anticipating the water coming in. But the issue about curfews, now that's something else. We've had virtually all over the state now, there's been these curfews implemented at night. And I understand the idea that you don't want people driving around in the city streets with water flooding them, and then you have to go out and rescue them because they wanted to go out and see if they could get a burger or something like that. But it really doesn't matter because you have a freedom to travel, right? You have the ability to travel where you want. Government is not supposed to be a parent. You are not a child, so you don't have curfews. And, you know, our rights don't simply exist at the convenience of law enforcement personnel or first responders. And I think a lot of people, you know, I'm one of the few that actually have a problem with this type of thing because a lot of people are saying, well, you know, the idea is you don't want people out there and then you have to risk the lives of first responders. You know, maybe they're tired of risking their lives to go out and rescue idiots who ride around in 3 feet of water. Well, you know what?
You know, that is kind of true.
It's true, but they're emergency personnel.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. But I have seen people do some really dumb stuff.
Yeah, I know you've seen it already. People are deciding to go down a street that they should know is, you know, already underwater, and they're just taking their car down there, and then, oh, you know, you gotta rescue them. But you know what? If emergency personnel don't want to be emergency personnel, then maybe they shouldn't, you know, be emergency personnel. This is when emergency personnel earns their money, right? When we have emergencies, when we have a fire, a house burning, we don't tell the fire department, well, you know, if it's convenient, then you can put the fire out, but,
right,
you know,
right.
Don't worry about it otherwise. They shouldn't have started the fire. No, in these situations, it's when emergency personnel is supposed to earn their money. And if they don't want to do it, then go do something else. Does the military get the option of not fighting a battle when it seems that it's inconvenient to them? Of course not. So we've also got mandatory evacuations here in Florence County. There's some areas, not for the whole county, obviously, but for some areas, they have implemented mandatory evacuations. And the Florence Council got together and they had an emergency meeting the other night, and they passed a resolution, and part of the resolution says, quote, "The authorized individuals are directed and given the authority to compel evacuation," that means forced, "of all or of part of the population from any stricken or threatened area in Florence County if such action is deemed necessary for the preservation of life." Well, of course, if there's a problem, this is such an issue that people may lose their lives, then inform them. They need to leave and do what you can to help them get out. But, come on, you can't force people to leave their homes if they don't want to. But the Florence City Council, I'm sorry, the Florence County Council seems to believe that it can. And this is taking place in other areas across the state as well. Now, what I would like to point out for the Florence County Council, if you had driven down the streets of Florence over a week ago, say shortly after we knew that the storm system was coming in and we were going to have record levels of flooding, you could have looked at the gutters and the street drains and you would have seen dirt, grass, trash, all kinds of stuff, right? It was obvious that these drains were clogged. We've got fennels and ditch weeds growing up in the gutters in the streets. Okay? So it's funny that the Florence County Council can have an emergency meeting in the middle of the night to restrict travel and to force people out of their homes, but they can't get off their lazy asses and clean the drains in the streets when we're going to have record levels of rain. We can't get that done, but we can violate people's rights. And that's awfully funny, and I think that shows a level of incompetence that really should be they should be held accountable for.
I would agree with that. I mean, those drains should be getting cleaned on a regular basis, to prevent loss of life or property. And anybody knows if you have a maple tree next door and those little spinny things come down and end up in your gutters in the springtime, what happens once the thunderstorms come, right?
Yeah, and these drains apparently haven't been cleaned for quite some time. I mean, I don't actually recall seeing them being cleaned in years, but I don't want to go that far and say they haven't cleaned them in years, but it certainly appears that way. Seriously, we've got bushes growing up in the gutter dirt. So it's that if you wanted to do something, how about next time you actually prepare and do something useful as opposed to telling people that they can't exercise their rights to freedom of travel or staying in their own homes? I'd like to see Florence County Council do something productive for a change.
Right. That's a great point. That's a great point. And with any monies that are going to have to be paid out here for damages from the insurance companies, I bet you the insurance companies would be interested to know that the town or the city hasn't been keeping the drains cleaned.
Oh, I'm sure they would be. And
Yeah.
I mean, this really would, if you looked at some of the areas in the city, you could see that the reason a lot of the roads were flooded almost immediately. And this happens anytime we have a rainstorm in Florence, by the way. It's just it's pretty bad. If it rains heavily, the roads are flooded. And that's a shame. You clean the gutters and this doesn't have a problem. This isn't the problem. But just to give you an idea of what else is happening over the state, it should be a great lesson, and hopefully, we get out of this without any more loss of life and loss of property. But it should be a lesson to people about preparation, because we knew this was coming days ahead of time. And there are areas in South Carolina now that are completely cut off from the outside world because they've got maybe four highways going in and out of town, and they're all washed out. They're all closed. They're all gone. So anybody in that town is unable to get out physically unless they walk. There are people who are on I-95. We've taken to calling them I-95 refugees, right? Because they were driving on I-95, but either it closed or the weather got so bad that they couldn't continue to drive. And now they're stuck in these little towns, and they can't go anywhere. They have money on cards. By the way, a lot of the credit card machines went down. So they've got their credit card. They've got their Prius, but they've got no food. And with the credit card, they've got virtually no money and, nowhere to stay. So they're parking out in the gas station parking lot, or they're going to the local shelter, right, which is not a great place to be, as you probably know. So these are the types of things. I mean, we've got some places in South Carolina now that the sewage was coming back into their water system. So they had for the capital of South Carolina, they had a boil water advisory. So if you went to get water out of the tap, you needed to boil it for a few minutes before you could even use it because the sewage is backing up into the water system. And, this is a perfect example of why you should have potable water on hand in these types of situations. And, it would be great if people would use this as a sort of a learning experience to kind of see what they lack right now. And, hopefully we get out of this and people learn a good lesson from it.
Yeah, always make sure you at least have some cash to store.
I would also like the city council to learn the lesson of a little bit of common sense preparation as well.
Exactly. One thing you should always make sure you have, and this is my dad always yelling at me, is make sure you have cash, even if it's just a little bit. But, perfect example, ATMs go down. What are you going to do?
Yeah, and you could see, and this was just yesterday. I went out just for to see what was going on, and you could see that people were finally starting to realize that this is actually a big deal. This isn't just a rainstorm for a couple of days. This is actually a serious problem. And the stores, the credit card machines were down, and you'd be surprised at how many people didn't have any money when the credit card machine was down. They just pay everything with their little card, and they move on. And, that didn't work yesterday. They either had to pay cash, which they didn't have, or they'd have to just go home and live off of what they had.
And didn't you also tell me that people were coming from the other counties to get gas because they had power outages?
Yeah.
The gas pumps don't work if there's no electricity.
This is the same thing that was happening when we had a major ice storm, right? Nobody prepared really for that either. And then you saw immediately people realizing, we don't have any power. We're going to have to go to the next county over to get gas. And then you see, as we saw yesterday, that people were starting to kind of, it was becoming a little tense situation at the gas pumps as people tried to weasel in and out of one another and get last-minute gas. So, it just shows you, this is not Katrina. This is not that situation, and we don't have looting, and we don't have people going around and confiscating guns, not yet, but we don't have that. That's why I don't want to blow this out of proportion at all, but you could still see that even with this situation, which is nowhere near what we had in Katrina or anything like that, that there is still a level of tension that's already rising up in people at the last minute. And that people are so vastly underprepared, that shows you what would happen in a real intense type of situation.
If this were a real emergency.
Yeah.
Well, here's what the one thing that was kind of getting me about this is over the last 2 years, we've seen some pretty incredible, crazy, never-before-seen weather occurrences, right? I mean, a couple summers ago, we had all the tornadoes spreading across the heartland, and it's like, wow, more tornadoes than we've ever seen, and all this crazy flooding that happened in Texas this summer. Remember that?
Yeah.
How insane that was? And what's going on right now in South Carolina is definitely a good rainstorm, and I'm sure, like you said, they weren't cleaning out the drains, so I'm sure that is contributing to a lot of the flooding. But why am I seeing that officials yesterday were quoted as calling this as a once-in-a-1,000-year flood? Did you see that?
I don't know about 1,000 years, but it's certainly the worst that I've ever seen, and it's really, I've I don't know of any other time in South Carolina where we've had this amount of water. There's been flooding with I lived through Hurricane Hugo, which was one of the worst hurricanes ever.
Mm-hmm.
And it hit where we lived. And there was not this amount of water. So this is really a serious situation. I mean, it really is a once in a lifetime type of situation. I don't know about 1,000 years. I don't know the 1,000-year history of flooding in
right.
the state of South Carolina, but I will say that I don't know of any other time where this has ever happened in the history of the state, from what I've understood.
Well, hopefully it'll be over soon, and you guys can dry out.
The whole state. I mean, this is from Charleston is on the coast, the southern part of the east coast, and then Columbia is kind of in the middle of the state, and Spartanburg's kind of northwest, and it's all underwater. It's all flooded. So, you know, the biggest thing that we worry about now is that there's rumors that some of the cities are going to cut off water because the sewage is backed up into it, and they're going to have to get sewage out. So now we're going to have people in urban areas and, well, all over really running out of water out of the tap. And with the roads washed out, there's a concern about being able to get supplies in. I mean, there are some places in just the next few counties over that are literally cut off from the outside world. You're not going to be able to get a truck in there because all the highways are gone. And, you know, bridges are gone. So, I mean, I don't want to over-exaggerate the level of the crisis, but I don't want to underestimate it either. I mean, it is really a serious situation. It really is something that hasn't ever happened here before.
Wow. I didn't realize it was the whole state.
Yeah, and combine that with incompetency that I was talking about a second ago, and people that are not preparing and crumbling infrastructure because we haven't built it up to first world standards, then that makes it even worse.
So any word, are they calling in any type of federal resources yet? I mean, if there's not going to be any water here coming in the near future and they can't get in, some of the roads are washed out, that sounds like they're going to need some sort of amphibious assault.
Well, Obama declared South Carolina a state of emergency. So I hope
did. I saw that. Yeah.
I hope he doesn't bomb us. we have called out the National Guard. I think the National Guard's out in Charleston and Columbia. They're trying to build sandbags and that sort of thing and provide some type of relief. So that's already begun. And we got to wait till the rain stops, really, because everybody else is just kind of hunkering down until this rain's gone. And I think it's supposed to go for the rest of the day, maybe even into tomorrow. And it just the more it rains, the worse it gets. With the dam breaking again, infrastructure, but and then the bridge going out, infrastructure. This can get worse. And, I don't know. I guess they're going to have to get some type of emergency supplies into some of these areas pretty soon. But if they cut off the water, that's going to be a really scary situation.
Absolutely. So, at least you're safe, right? You're safe up in your area. We don't need to, send someone to go evacuate you.
No, I haven't been mandated to evacuate yet, so I think I'm fine. I wait till the authorities tell me if I need to be scared.
Right. Well, that's good to hear. One of the other things that I wanted you to kind of talk about, I totally missed, yet I have it queued up to listen to your interview with Kate Daly on The Daily Show Friday. You were back there for what, the third time now doing an interview?
Yeah, I think it was the third or fourth time, actually.
Mm-hmm. And that was great. I mean, when I was cutting it to get it ready to rip up, I heard bunches of it. And that was all about Syria and Russia, and you got callers calling in, which was pretty cool.
Yeah, it was a good interview. They're a great host over there. And, we talked about the Syrian and Russian situation and the Russian involvement in the Syrian situation and how this is all going to play out. And I think it was a pretty good show. It's up at BrandonTurbeville.com now. I've got the YouTube video up and the SoundCloud player. in the post, so people can go listen to that and stuff on my website.
Well, did you want to fill us in on a little bit of that? Because really, the Syria-Russia situation is, I'm seeing a lot of stuff in the news, and to be honest, for the last couple of weeks, I've been really buried in some technical stuff with UCY and trying to make some things work, so I haven't been paying really close attention, but it seems to me like in 3 days, Russia was able to go in there and bomb the crap out of some ISIS strongholds and make us look pretty foolish.
Well, it's funny what you can actually do when you actually bomb ISIS, isn't it? It's the thing is, the Russians have been bombing in about 72 hours. They had done more to fight ISIS than the United States has done since the beginning of the crisis, since the beginning of the U.S. bombing, right? This is simply because they're actually targeting ISIS strongholds, and they're actually targeting so-called moderate rebels, which I'll mention in a second. That's what has the United States in such an uproar. It's funny, if you look at the United States' reaction, the reaction of John Kerry or Obama, it's getting harder and harder to argue that these guys are not supporting ISIS, right? Because they want to destroy ISIS, and then Russia goes in and destroys ISIS, and their response is, you can't do that. You can't go in and bomb ISIS. You can't. That's a violation of some type of law that we just made up in our heads. Because essentially what Russia has done, they have – the United States is claiming that Russia is only interested in propping up Assad. And the United States has also accused Russia of bombing non-ISIS targets. And, well, that's both of those things are true. The United States – is right that Russia wants to prop up Assad. I think Russia has admitted that, and I don't have a problem with it. I think that's a great idea. Russia has also bombed non-ISIS targets. If you want to consider the moderate rebels, the moderate cannibals in Syria as anything other than ISIS, then sure, they bombed non-ISIS targets. That's good. I hope they continue to do that. There is no difference between ISIS and these moderate cannibals, these moderate rebels that the United States claims are somehow democracy-loving freedom fighters. They're a bunch of savages, and they're jihadists, and I wish Russia success in bombing them.
Can I ask you something about that?
Yeah.
Aren't those the same, quote-unquote, moderate rebels that McCain met with and that we were training and giving weapons to?
Yeah, they're terrorists. Whether it's the Free Syrian Army or the Harakat Azam or Jaish al-Islam or something like that, it's all the same thing. It's all a part of Al Qaeda, which is ISIS is nothing but a name change coming from Al Qaeda in Iraq anyway, and we've gone through that here on this show before. And these little brigades, these little terrorist brigades, have either openly stated that they work with ISIS, that they transfer arms to ISIS, that they fight in coordination with ISIS, or there's some type of splinter brigade that they're indistinguishable from ISIS. And take Harakat Azam, for instance. This was supposed to be one of our moderate rebel factions that we supported. We brought in Tau anti-tank missiles, and gave it to Harakat Azam, and then what did they do? They took it and they just gave it to ISIS. And again, the name ISIS, it comes from Al Qaeda in Iraq. There's Al Qaeda, and then there's Al Qaeda in Iraq, and then there's Al Qaeda in Syria, and Al Qaeda in Syria just called itself the Al Nusra Front. With the two kind of join forces across the border. They'd always had forces join, but they decided to work as one unit. They called themselves the Islamic Emirate of Iraq and the Levant, and then they changed that name to the Islamic State of Iraq and the Levant, and now it's the Islamic State of Iraq and Syria, so it's ISIS. And there's never been any difference between those groups. And those little terrorist brigades that we talk about, the Jaish al-Islam and that kind of stuff, it's nothing but different subsidiary organizations from Al-Qaeda. And the United States is well aware of this because they're controlling them. And Turkey is helping to control them as well.
Well, even the State Department put through official name change documents, if you remember that, when they went from ISIL to ISIS to Daesh, remember?
Yeah, yeah. And that's all this stuff. I mean, when people get confused with the names, oh, we're bombing ISIS, but I hope they don't bomb Jaish al-Islam, you know, because they're the moderate rebels. I mean, this is nothing but propaganda. All you have to look at, the Russians have said that they're not going to bomb the Free Syrian Army because they think the Free Syrian Army should have a political voice in Syria. And that's a mistake. That's a mistake. They should bomb the Free Syrian Army. The Free Syrian Army, I'll give you an example. Remember Abu Sakkar? He's the guy who cut out the heart of the Syrian soldier and ate it for the camera. Well, he was part of the Yarmouk Brigade. The U.S. would claim Yarmouk Brigade, that's a moderate terrorist faction. They're not connected to ISIS or Al-Qaeda. Well, look at them. They're eating hearts of Syrian soldiers. They're jihadists. Or what are they? And but they're also part of the Free Syrian Army. And that's supposed to be the moderate rebel leadership there, the Free Syrian Army and the Syrian Revolutionary Front, which both of them have admitted that they work with ISIS. So I would encourage the Russians to bomb them too, and but maybe they'll bomb the other ones and let Assad take care of the Free Syrian Army, since most of those guys are really just, you know, pathetic traitors and defectors that are leading that operation. So maybe Assad will be able to take them out. But we also had these reports, you know, that Russia is bombing civilians in Syria. I don't know if you saw that. There were photos that were put out by NGOs operating in Syria, Soros-linked NGOs, of course, that said that Russia launched these airstrikes, and not only did they hit non-ISIS targets, they hit civilians. They killed innocent people. Well, they even showed pictures of this volunteer holding this little girl who was bleeding and pulling her out of the rubble and said, see, this is what Putin is doing in Syria. Notice nobody's said one single word. These NGOs haven't seen one single word about U.S. bombing of civilians in Syria. But the Russians, it's the end of the world. It's funny, these reports came out before the Russian planes ever actually took off. But yeah, the picture that was shared by the White Helmets, and this is a Soros-linked NGO that's sort of kind of connected to Human Rights Watch, which is a discredited Soros-linked NGO itself. They showed this picture, and it turns out that it had been taken 5 days ahead of time. It had been taken 5 days at a different bombing, and it was used to blame on the Russian airstrikes. And as for the results of the Russian airstrikes, we've seen a number of ISIS command centers being dismantled. We've seen a number of training facilities being bombed. We've seen equipment being bombed. There's apparently hundreds of ISIS fighters who are now defecting. It really is amazing what can happen when you actually bomb the terrorist organizations, and that should show everybody that what I've been saying here is true, that the United States hasn't been bombing ISIS, because if they had, this is what you would have seen.
Right.
And that's why they're throwing a fit that the Russians are doing it now.
And, you know, it's not just the United States. I just saw, you were saying 5 days ago, those photos showing children and stuff that were injured in a bombing. Didn't France just start lobbing bombs in there a few days ago before Russia?
Yeah, France. France has gone in there as well. They've launched a number of bombing campaigns. So we're coming up on a situation that we can see an actual direct military confrontation between Russia and the United States, or a NATO country, or Israel. I mean, the Israel thing almost happened the other day. We had Russian fighters flying in to Syria near the Eastern Mediterranean, and they ran into some, not physically, but they came into contact with some Israeli jets who had no business being there, and they didn't know they were there, allegedly. So,
where was that? Short,
in the Eastern Mediterranean, above Lebanon, in that the coastal area of Syria, they had a tense standoff for a second before the Israeli jets pulled away and went back. But you know, you gotta ask yourself, what would happen if a Russian plane is going in for a bombing dive in the ISIL free zone, you know, that the United States and Turkey declared? What if they decided they're going after ISIS, because ISIS is all in the ISIL free zone and nobody's doing anything about it? What if Russia went to bomb them there and the United States said, wait, this is a no-fly zone, we're going to shoot you down? What if the Russian plane was going in for a bombing raid, or vice versa, an American plane was flying around, and the Russians assumed that the United States fighter was about to shoot them out of the sky, and they shot the American plane down? Or Israel. What if Israel just did what it's known for doing, just went in and started shooting at everybody because they can fight and die to the last American? What would happen? Do you think that we just ignore this situation and move on? Do you think the Russians wouldn't respond? Do you think the Americans wouldn't respond? I mean, we're in a situation where a pilot, some first-year pilot, could have the fate of the world in his hands. If he pushes a button or not, could determine whether or not we start lobbing nuclear bombs at one another.
And I totally see that in this situation. I mean, Israel's kind of the wild card because they're all angry over the whole Iran deal to boot, you know. And there, I just saw that United Nations, I'm sure you saw the clip with Netanyahu at United Nations.
Yes, that was the greatest speech that Netanyahu has ever given in his life, because he shut the hell up for 45 seconds.
Yes, he did, and gave the evil eye. Yeah, I mean, he is so incensed over this Iran deal. And I mean, Syria is mixed right in there because of Lebanon and some of Hezbollah, right? We have all these other groups in there that are kind of all mixed up and have been getting involved in trying to keep the United States from toppling Assad. So the fact that the timing on this Iran deal comes in, and now Russia, though, you know, I mean, I don't think that they have bad intentions. I really do think it's Putin saying, get out of the way, Clyde. You know, you guys have been screwing around here for 2.5 years. Let's just take care of it. If you say that's the problem, let's wipe them out, right?
I think Putin is concerned there may be a humanitarian issue. I don't know. I honestly think that Putin is more concerned with Russian geopolitical strategy than anything else. I think Russia is concerned with Russia, not with Syria. And I think they recognize that what the United States and NATO are doing in Eastern Europe and in Asia and the Middle East is ultimately aimed at them. They have to know this. And, Putin is clearly a master chess player here, because he really has routed Obama on this. And I say Obama, but whatever he represents, the deep state that really is pushing this. But I think they're really more concerned with a number of different things, and I think one of them is this sphere of influence in the Middle East. Because if Syria goes, not only does their sphere of influence in the Middle East in terms of Syria, not only does that go, a physical presence, a warm water port in Tartus and a warm water port in Latakia, which they're getting now, not only does that evaporate, but also the connections that it has to Iran, right? Because if you break Syria away, you break Hezbollah and Iran from one another. They can't really, Iran can't really supply Hezbollah in the way that it needs to. And so you crash Hezbollah, that helps the Israelis, and then you have the Iranians who are out there kind of swinging in the wind. That's all that Russia would have left. I think they're also considering the fact that the Qatari pipeline, which is what the NATO powers wanted to see. They wanted to see oil come up from Qatar up through Saudi Arabia and Jordan, Syria, Turkey, and then into Europe. The reason they wanted to do this was because Russia right now is the main supplier of oil and gas to Europe. If the Qatari pipeline goes through, then they have an out. They have leverage over Russia. Right now they don't. Because at any point, Russia could cut off the gas, cut off the oil to Europe, and it's going to get very, very cold, very fast, and there's nothing that they can really do about it. If the Qatari pipeline was there, they could tell Russia to get lost and still have their oil and gas coming from Qatar. But Assad nixed that in 2009. He said no to that, and he went with the Iraq-Iran Syria deal, which Iran is going to provide oil coming through Syria, and presumably with Iran providing oil to Europe, that would not present a threat to Russia in terms of leverage, since they have such close relations. So I think that's what Putin is concerned with, not necessarily the, you know, simply we want to defeat ISIS. Also, there's this question of, although I do think that, that plays a role, because there is this question of how ISIS is going to be used against Russia. If you look back, you see that Turkey has recently sent delegates to Ukraine, and the Ukrainian, the NATO part of Ukraine, the puppet government of Ukraine, has decided that it's going to work with Turkey to create what they call Muslim brigades in Crimea, and they're going to use terrorists coming from Syria, you know, this cadre of fanatics that have been brought to Syria. They're going to take terrorists from Syria and bring them to Crimea and in Ukraine and use them against Russia. They also want to use them in places like Chechnya and Georgia and a number of other countries that border Russia. And of course, the Uyghur aspect plays a major role in that as well. So they're going to try to play along with these Tartars, this group of people, Muslim people in Crimea. There's a number of them that have this Tartar World Congress that promotes separatism and breakaway governments that doesn't represent all of them by any means, but there's a minority of them that would play into this role, much like the Uyghur situation in Xinjiang and in China. So they're going to use that to try to destabilize Russia. And I think that Putin recognizes that this is the next step, right? Once Syria falls, it's clearly Iran, and then the infrastructure is going to be put in place to destroy Russia. And they're already going to do that with terrorists. They've already got their hands full with those terrorists in Chechnya to begin with, and many of them are fighting in Syria as well. So I think that's the reasons that Putin is more concerned about Syria.
I did not know about Turkey getting involved in Ukraine with Crimea. That could really turn into a rat's nest, couldn't it?
Yeah, the Eastern European situation is not only as dangerous as the situation in Syria, it's even more dangerous because this is directly on the borders of Russia. But Turkey, if you look at them, I mean, there's these different agendas here. There's this sort of world oligarchical agenda, and then you have the agendas of the NATO oligarchs and the Russian Chinese axis oligarchs, and then you have the individual oligarchs. And I think if you look at Turkey, you get people like Erdogan. And Erdogan is a nitwit. He's an Islamist, and he seems to believe that he's going to be the next emperor of the new Ottoman Empire. And if he provokes the Syrians, and he pushes into Iraq, and he pushes the Iranians, and he pushes the Russians, then maybe he'll get part of the Ottoman Empire back. He'll get part of all those countries. And as you can see, that's not going to work. The more that he provokes in Syria and bombs Kurds, the worse his situation gets in the eastern part of Turkey. And the more the Turkish people realize that he really is a fool, and they made a mistake by allowing Islamic parties to take control in Turkey. And so it's a very it's a powder keg in Turkey, really. But this shows you also that religion has no place in politics, that political Islam needs to be done away with.
Right, and Turkey has been instrumental very quietly in the background in a lot of what's going on in the Middle East right now, haven't they?
Well, they've been getting louder and louder. They've been the conduit for terrorists going into Syria. Mm-hmm. And if you look at that ISIL free zone, I think we may have talked about this, but the Kurds have this border between Syria and Turkey sealed up except for one area, right? So they, from the coast till about the middle of the country, on the border, the Kurds have it sewed up and shut down from the eastern end of Syria and the Turkish border till about the middle of the country. They've got it sewed up. So there's this little bit of territory in the middle. It's about 60 miles wide that the Kurds have been unable to capture and to close in terms of the border. And they were on their way to doing that, except the United States and Turkey stepped in and declared an ISIL free zone, and Turkey went in and bombed the Kurds. If they had been able to shut the 60 mile portion of the border down, that would have eliminated the ability of equipment, personnel, arms, etc., to come from Turkey, which is where most of this stuff is coming. It was coming from Israel, it was coming from Jordan, but that has largely been shut down. Jordan, it's still trickling in. Israel is still trickling in, but largely it's been shut down a good bit. But in the Turkish area, that's where the majority of these guys are coming through. They ship them into Turkey, and they go ahead and funnel them in to Syria in this area. So that's what the ISIL free zone is about. It's about protecting ISIL and protecting the supply routes and the personnel routes, and making sure that it gets in there. Not necessarily, not at all, to actually stop ISIL movements.
Right. Now, speaking about routes getting in and getting out, you have some contacts inside of Syria. There's this mass migration happening now with people fleeing all the unrest there. What's going on the ground? I mean, are your friends still in Syria? I hope they decided to leave, at least by this point.
Well, no, I still have contacts in Syria. They're still there. The situation in some areas is actually getting better in Syria now that the Russians have come in. The Russian presence, it changed within a couple of days, right? Some of the cities were already getting better. Doesn't mean the situation's great. It's still a horrible situation, but it's much better than it was. And so there's reason to see some positive outlook in that regard. In terms of the migration, that's an interesting discussion, because I think a lot of people have been misled on this issue. And I think my record of standing with the Syrian people is quite strong and unparalleled with a lot of others out there who can't seem to get the story exactly right. But the question of whether or not these Syrian refugees should be allowed into Europe, the first thing I would say is that the situation in Syria that has caused people to want to leave is entirely the fault of the West. It's entirely the fault of the United States, of France, of Britain, of NATO. They're the ones that destroyed it. A lot of the Syrians, and I'm speaking of Syrians here, they don't want to come to Europe. It may be a shock to a lot of people in Europe and the United States, but not everybody wants to be here. A lot of them, they have homes, and that's where they want to be. And not everywhere else is an awful place, you know. So they much rather be in Syria, owning their business, going to school, living their lives. But the United States and NATO destroyed it, so there they are. The other question, though, is whether or not they should be allowed in. And I would say no, because mass migrations, immigration, particularly illegal immigration, has been used, especially in the last 30 years, for social disruption, destruction of cultures, social tension, etc. All you have to do is look at England to see how that's played out, to look at France and see how that's played out, and to look at what's happening now in Europe. Now, I would also point out that a lot of these immigrants coming in, you know, we had the little boy who died in the boat. His body washed up on the shore. Aylin, right. I think it was his name.
Yeah.
And that pulled at the heartstrings of the American people and the Europeans, and they said, well, see, we have to let these people in. How horrible. But where were these bleeding hearts for the last 4 years?
Right. I mean, this isn't a brand new humanitarian crisis. This has been going on for as long as I've known you, just about.
Right. And they've been destroying Syria for that long. And here's the question. If all of these people were fleeing Assad's brutality, because that's what the story is, right? It's Assad's fault. Why didn't they leave in 2007? Why didn't they leave in 2008 or 2009 and 2010? Why didn't they leave then? Why leave now all of a sudden? Because it's not Assad that they're fleeing. In fact, if you speak to many of the Syrian refugees, they'll tell you the same thing. But here's the other issue. A lot of these people are coming out of either refugee camps in Turkey, or they're being pushed out of other places. Now, Turkey, despite the fact that they've helped slaughter hundreds of thousands of Syrian people, has had this very curious refugee policy, essentially an open door, where they had millions of Syrian refugees living out of these big tent cities. All of a sudden, we have a big refugee push Has nobody questioned why all of a sudden this is happening? Now, you can get to Europe from Turkey over land, and that's a fairly easy route, but the Turks won't allow these immigrants to do that. They're pushing them out in the water and sending them over the water to get to Europe. Now, another issue is that I've got, again, sources in Syria that are telling me that a lot of the people who are giving – they're actually giving preference to individuals who have a more fundamentalist ideology to get out of Syria. Not all of them, but they are. They seem to be giving preference to people who are more fundamentalist in nature and giving them priority and getting them out of the country. And another thing, for all of these immigrants, have you looked at the immigrants who are flooding into Europe? They're not a lot of them are not Syrian. Okay, I think there's 1 in 4 are actually Syrian refugees. So the question is, we've destroyed Syria, so let's bring in all the immigrants from Africa? That doesn't make any sense.
That's what I wanted to ask. I mean, there have been a lot of people kind of pointing to the videos of the migrants traveling, saying, you know, are these women and children trying to escape the bombing, or who are these people? And, you know, I distinctly remember you did a story back quite a few years ago already about the refugee camps in Turkey. I mean, they've been there living in tent cities for a couple years now, haven't they?
They have, and it's because the Turks are pushing them out. And this is because they're trying to create a couple of things. One is to push the Europeans to see what's happening to their countries and say, God, whatever you have to do to get Assad out of there and get these people back home and get them out of here, just do it and get it over with, because it is causing social tension. And again, a lot of the Syrian refugees, again, it might confuse people, but a lot of the Syrian refugees are highly educated, more educated than they are here, I can tell you that. They have master's degrees, they're business owners and that sort of thing. But the individuals who are getting preference to be shipped into Europe, a lot of them are the fundamentalist type, the bearded savages who are being sent over there. And there are indeed large collections of refugees that are only men. And what kind of refugee situation produces more refugees that are men than women and children? And what kind of country would accept the men over the women and children?
Right.
And not only that, again, I go back to the fact that 1 in 4 are from Syria. If the question is, we have to do this for humanitarian reasons, we have to let these people in because they're fleeing a horrible situation, then why in the hell are you letting people in from Nigeria or Eritrea?
Right, right.
The fact is that, you know, this is going to be very politically incorrect for people to hear, I think, but Europeans have just as much right to their country and their culture as anybody else does. And Europe has been destroyed under immigration. And this is not attacking the immigrants as people. You know, people should be treated as human beings, period. And, you know, anybody that would go out and berate or mistreat an individual who came seeking asylum or immigrated to your country simply because that's what they did, that's despicable. But they don't need to be there. That is not their country. Europe does not owe it to the world, and neither does the United States, to open the floodgates to immigration. Tony Blair, his cabinet, some of his cabinet secretaries, admitted that they considered it their job to change the culture and the face of England forever with immigration policies, and they've done it. I've been there. You can see it. Now, why would they want to do that? You know, why would they want to destroy culture like that? It causes social tension, because when you get places like Germany, where you've got people, contrary to what people think about Germany, Germany is suffering under high unemployment. They do the same thing that we do. They fudge the numbers and claim that they have high employment numbers, and they also force people to work with essentially no pay to get benefits, so it makes it look like they have inflated employment numbers. But you've got all these unemployed people in Germany, and then you bring in these immigrants on top of it. And then what happens is the Germans, and this is not just the Germans, but most places, will look at the immigrants and say, we can't have these people here. Look at them. They bring crime, they don't assimilate, and they take our jobs and drive wages down. The immigrants come in and say, look, the Germans don't like us. We have to live in these ghettos, and we have to work for less money than they make, and we get second-class status. So everybody's angry and fighting with one another, and nobody's really paying attention to the fact that the people who created the situation in the immigrants' home countries and the people who created the situation in Germany are exactly the same people. So it creates a lot of social tension. And anybody that tells you that immigration is good for your economy just to promote some type of, you know, social justice warrior program, they're wrong. There's only one instance in which immigration is good for a country, and that's when you have a shortage of labor. And with what, how many people do we have unemployed now? 50 million maybe?
Right.
Unemployed people in the United States. Does it look like we have a shortage of labor? Does it look like Europe has a shortage of labor? No, of course not. You're just bringing in more unemployed people. And, you know, when you bring people in mass like that, they don't assimilate, and they should be assimilating because, you know what, Europe isn't Africa. And it isn't the Middle East, and it shouldn't be. And just because, and just like Africa shouldn't have to learn how to speak German because white Germans want to come over and take advantage of things there, Germans shouldn't have to learn to speak African and not offend Muslim communities because they have immigrated there. So, you know, I'm just in favor of people having their own countries and their own cultures, and of course being open and being ready to be polite and getting along with one another. But this is not what that's about. This is about flooding Europe with immigration. They're creating social tension, and it should be resisted.
And I would agree with that. I mean, on the other hand, most of us in this country are from the progeny of immigrants, right? Back at one point in time. But we were a young country back then as well. You know what I mean? And they did have, you know, each nation that had immigrants come to the United States typically had a little area where everyone kind of stuck to themselves versus joined the big melting pot, right?
Yeah, well, you know, we also somehow, it's funny how in the 1800s people would come from Eastern Europe or from other places, and they'd traverse the land and their country, and then they'd make it all the way across the Atlantic Ocean in rickety boats and manage to do it legally. But yet we're supposed to be somehow today, we, you know, immigrants simply can't navigate around that. And that doesn't make any sense either. And, you know, we do have the history of people coming from all over, but I know there's a lot of people who will say, yeah, look at the Indians, you know, we're all immigrants. We came over here. Yeah, exactly. Never use the Native Americans as an example of why we should allow immigration, because in my book, that's a perfect example of why you shouldn't.
Right.
The Native Americans would have done well to have kicked the white man out early on and not allowed this to continue, because the last time I checked, they're on reservations. And, you know, it's a sad situation, but countries don't owe it to the world to allow immigration. Now, I'm not against immigration, but I am against uncontrolled waves of illegal immigration that's created for social tension. And that's what this is.
Now, let me ask you one last question here before we run out of time. Speaking of immigration, did you catch any of the story about the Egyptian billionaire who was looking for an island? I think it was off the coast of Greece to purchase for the immigrants, and he actually bought it.
Well, I wouldn't. Certainly, Greece is selling the islands.
Right, that's what I said. It's like, how convenient is that? Greece has an island for sale.
Yeah, Greece with the Tsipras sellout, which has to rank as one of the top most, you know, abrupt sellouts of any political race. The guy was screaming, no austerity, no austerity, and as soon as he gets elected, he starts screaming austerity. And now the situation's even worse now in Greece than it would have been if they had never elected him. So, they're putting up all their islands or most of their islands for sale, which is a national tragedy and shouldn't be allowed to happen. A country that sells its islands to billionaires and other countries, I mean, that is pathetic. And, you know, this is another example of why we should oppose austerity plans here at home as well as abroad.
Right. Well, I wonder where that plan is going. He had offered to build housing and businesses and get everybody started on a new life on this Greek island. So I don't know.
Yeah, I hadn't heard of that, by the way.
So. Oh, I'll see if I can find it after the show. Yeah, there've been a couple videos and a few stories about it, but he did it. He bought the island. So.
Yeah, I think there's been a number of bankers and stuff that have been purchasing up Greek islands for the last few years.
Yeah, well, property is good for making sure you don't lose money, right? You can rent it out to those who need it.
Yeah, they needed the money so they could pay back the bankers that were buying the islands.
Right. So what's next for you? What do you think your next story is going to be?
I don't know. We're following the Syrian situation pretty closely. That tends to be my area of expertise. But I think, you know, maybe another article on the flood situation and the incompetency of some people in leadership, positions who don't seem to care enough about rights, but they do. They don't seem to also care enough about actually preparing for storms. So, right. If anybody out there is listening in the areas where this has happened, you should hold your local leaders accountable for the incompetency that they've shown in some of these areas. And a lot of places have shown competency, but some of them haven't. And you know, so, but I think that that and following the Syrian situation is probably going to be where I'm at for a while. Of course, we'll have some more stuff coming out on Hillary Clinton in the near future.
Yeah, please mention your book in the last 40 seconds, too. Where can people get that?
The new book is The Difference It Makes, 36 Reasons Why Hillary Clinton Should Never Be President. There are many more than 36 reasons, but that's all I could fit in a book. And it's available at my website, brandonturbeville.com. You can go to Amazon and get it on Kindle for 99 cents. You can go to thebookpatch.com and buy it from the publisher. And it's free on my website. If you want to read it as a PDF, it's just on my website, top right-hand corner. You'll see it. Click on it and pull it up for free. And hopefully we'll have the books on Amazon sooner rather than later.
And that's BrandonTurbeville.com is your website.
That's right.
All right. Well, guess what? The music is coming here in about 5 seconds. Thank you so much for being on with us today for your day off in the South Carolina flooding. Hopefully we get you back on very soon. All right, guys, make sure you stick around. We got Ms. Lonnie Clark up next. Brand new Truth on the Tracks tonight at 10. Community Radio on the lobby. We will catch up with you.